Have you ever wondered why your morning coffee feels less like a choice and more like a necessity? Or why a plant that produces beautiful garden flowers could land you in federal prison? Our relationship with mind-altering plants is far stranger and more consequential than most of us realize. Three substances, opium, caffeine, and mescaline, have quietly shaped human civilization, altered our consciousness, and redefined what it means to be human. Yet we've categorized them arbitrarily. One powers our workdays, another fuels a devastating crisis, and the third remains sacred to some while forbidden to most. This isn't just about drugs. It's about an ancient partnership between humans and plants where the question of who domesticated whom becomes genuinely unclear. The Greeks understood what we've forgotten. Pharmakon meant both medicine and poison. Context and dose determine which. The opiates that killed 50,000 Americans in 2019 also make surgery bearable. Plants developed these compounds as pesticides. Caffeine was meant to kill insects. But some discovered a better strategy, controlling animals instead of repelling them. Coffee plants lace their nectar with caffeine to enhance bee memory, ensuring pollinators return. The plant drugs the bee, making it overestimate the flower's value. Humans fell into the same trap. We've spread coffee from Ethiopian highlands across 27 million acres, assigned 25 million people to tend it, and structured civilization around its consumption. We've done the same with opium poppies, coca, and cannabis. These plants effectively domesticated us, ensuring their survival by producing compounds we find irresistible. The relationship is symbiotic, though we're probably not as in charge as we imagine. Growing opium poppies creates a legal paradox. Garden catalogs sell them freely, their seeds top bagels, yet federal law makes cultivation a serious felony. The distinction? Your knowledge. Growing pretty flowers is legal. Cultivating Papaver somniferum with awareness of its opiate content is criminal, though the plant remains identical. This framework was tested when journalist Jim Hogshire was arrested after a houseguest reported him. The Federal Controlled Substances Act prohibits opium poppy and poppy straw as Schedule II substances, while exempting the seed thereof. Legal seeds produce illegal plants that produce legal seeds, a perfect legal paradox. The real crisis emerged not from backyard gardens, but from Purdue Pharma's boardroom. Aggressive marketing convinced doctors that OxyContin was safer than traditional opiates, earning the Sackler family over $35 billion while contributing to more than 230,000 overdose deaths. Today, nearly 50,000 Americans die yearly from opioid overdoses. The poppy, cultivated for 5,000 years as crucial medicine, became a scapegoat while pharmaceutical companies profited from synthetic versions of its compounds. For 90% of humans, being caffeinated isn't an altered state. It's baseline consciousness. We don't call our morning coffee an addiction, though caffeine is the world's most widely used psychoactive drug and the only one routinely given to children. The insidiousness is perfect. Your morning cup doesn't provide euphoria, but suppresses withdrawal symptoms from yesterday's consumption. Caffeine proposes itself as the solution to the very problem it creates. Caffeine hijacks adenosine receptors in your brain. Normally, adenosine builds throughout the day, creating sleep pressure. Caffeine blocks these receptors, while adenosine continues accumulating, also increasing adrenaline, serotonin, and dopamine, explaining its mood-enhancing and habit-forming nature. When coffee reached Europe in the 1650s, it transformed society. London's coffee houses became hubs where different classes mixed freely, discussing science and business. Lloyd's Coffee House became Lloyd's of London. The Grecian attracted Royal Society scientists like Newton and Halley. Caffeine fueled Enlightenment thinking, replacing Alcohol's fog with rationalism. Most significantly, it liberated workers from the sun's rhythms, making night shifts possible by keeping people awake against their natural circadian cycles. Despite centuries of warnings, research has cleared caffeine of serious health charges. Regular consumption links to decreased risk of several cancers, cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, dementia, and possibly depression. Coffee provides over 60% of Americans' antioxidant intake, and moderate drinkers live longer than non-drinkers. Yet, sleep researcher Matthew Walker presents a darker picture. Caffeine may fuel our modern sleep crisis, potentially contributing to Alzheimer's, stroke, heart failure, depression, anxiety, and obesity. With a 12-hour quarter life, noon caffeine still disrupts midnight sleep, reducing deep sleep by 15 to 20%, equivalent to aging someone 12 years. Harvard's Charles Chrysler warns, "We use caffeine to make up for a sleep deficit that is largely the result of using caffeine. The energy isn't free, it's borrowed from your future self." Coffee and tea's rise came bound with slavery and imperialism. By the late 1700s, tea represented 5% of Britain's gross national product while driving sugar consumption that fueled Caribbean slave plantations. Brazilian coffee relied on an estimated 4 million enslaved Africans. When China halted Britain's opium trade in 1839, Britain declared war, effectively sharpening English mines with tea while clouding Chinese mines with opium. Unlike other psychedelics that transport users to fantastical realms, mescaline, found in peyote and San Pedro cacti, allows you to see the familiar world through completely new eyes. As Aldous Huxley described, this is how one ought to see, how things really are. Colors become more vibrant, textures more intricate, ordinary objects take on profound significance. Despite universal praise, mescaline has virtually disappeared from Western use. Trips last 14 to 16 hours, require large doses, and natural sources are limited. Peyote grows slowly, taking up to 15 years to mature, and is increasingly scarce due to development, illegal harvesting, and climate change. The contrast between Western and indigenous uses is striking. While Westerners seek individual insight, Native Americans embrace it communally through the Native American Church, which emerged in the 1880s and now has over 250,000 members. For Native practitioners, peyote functions like an omniscient spirit that sees through people, forcing them to confront their faults. The ceremonies focus on personal healing, community rebuilding, family harmony, and connection with the divine, a moral model that fundamentally challenges Western conceptions of drug use. These three substances reveal plants as co-evolutionary partners that shaped human consciousness, not passive resources. Our legal distinctions, coffee celebrated, opium criminalized, mescaline restricted, expose cultural biases rather than inherent plant properties. Traditional cultures understood this power and surrounded these plants with rituals and guidance. The Aztecs regulated sacred plants carefully. Greek mystery cults incorporated them into structured ceremonies. We need evidence-based approaches acknowledging both benefits and risks while respecting these plants' profound evolutionary role. Context matters as much as the molecule. A San Pedro ceremony shows how chemistry and ritual create liminal space where the group transcends its parts. The ceremonial container, rituals, community support, cultural framework may be as crucial as the compound itself for transformation. This insight profoundly impacts psychedelic therapy and drug policy, suggesting context and community aren't merely helpful, but essential for healing. These plants have shaped our art, literature, science, and spirituality across cultures. They remind us that relationship matters more than substance. The question isn't whether to use these plants, but how to approach them with wisdom and humility, recognizing that in this ancient partnership, we may not be the ones in control.